This week, in the studio, the members of Rush are your musical counterpart. Everybody's buying,
nobody's here. You know, I think a lot of Rush fans always wanted to hear us play like we used to play. You know, bringing back that certain quality that we had in our earlier days, again, of the three-piece, of the core of the band, bringing it back and being more forceful with it and more focused and direct, I think was something that a lot of Rush fans really welcomed. And I think it was a welcome return of a particular aspect of our sound that Rush fans wanted to hear again. This is Alex Lifeson of Rush in the studio for Counterparts.
Rush would continue for a full decade making some of the most important music of the 1980s before another clear musical demarcation point, Counterparts album. I asked guitarist Alex Lifeson if he remembers the seed sprouting at any particular moment.
Actually, it was on the Roll the Bones tour. I remember it, actually. We were sitting on the bus. We were driving to the next gig. And we talked about how we wanted to approach the next record, which was Counterparts at the time, that we really wanted to go back to that thing that I was talking about of getting an essence of the core of what Rush was, or what Rush is, really. I mean, we've spread out a lot and tried a lot of different things, but the most important part is to remember that we are a three-piece band, and that's where the energy comes from. And I think we just reevaluated that at that time, and with Counterparts we really tried to take that approach with it. We tried to go back to that sort of sound, that off the floor sound, and treat other things really as peripheral things, you know, the keyboard development and that sort of thing, and really try to play more from the gut.
Thank you.
Well, I guess as Neil started writing, there was a sense of the duality, of being sensitive to both sides of a personality, the female and the male side of everyone's personality, and being more balanced and in tune more with that sensitivity. You know, a lot of those songs talk about that awareness. Certainly Animate, it deals with that that awareness of that composition of each person. And each of those songs develops through that thing. I think with Neil, with Counterparts, he didn't want to write so much thematically as he had in the past. He wanted to touch on a number of different things that were loosely tied together. Certainly in the past, there's always been a theme that's run through every record, like Roll the Bones, for instance, the idea of chance and fate. And certainly if you want to go back even further, even more so. But he's, I think, just sort of spreading out a little bit more with Counterparts thematically, not sticking to one thing in particular. Someone at the studio found an amp in a garbage pile. It was an old Ampeg amp, and it's an open chassis. You know, you can see all the tubes and everything. And this thing, you had to punch it and kick it every once in a while to get it to work right. But, you could fry an egg on it. You could hear it sizzling away in the corner. And that became an integral part of his sound. And again, you know, it was that approach to something raw and just, you know, plugging it in and turning it on and hoping it worked.
If it's safely restrained, lightning reactions must be carefully trained. Heat of the moment, curse of the young, spit out your anger, don't swallow your tongue. Pendulum swing. You might be too dizzy to do the right thing. Try on the fire, ultimate proof. Moment of crisis. Don't swallow the truth. We'll be right back.
furious rock and roll from Rush, Stick It Out comes from the album Counterparts.
When Getty and I start writing, Neil always has three or four things that he's worked on, and it gives us a starting point. We don't always use it. We don't always start off with the lyrics and then write accordingly. You know, we might do that for a couple of songs, and then Ged and I just feel like playing. So we start jamming, and things develop. With Counterparts, it was the same situation. There were things that Neil had written that we worked to, and then there were other things that developed musically first. Stick It Out as an example. A lot of that was, you know, written outside of the studio. I'd written some stuff for Stick It Out before we went in, and Getty had a couple of ideas. So we developed that song musically before there were any lyrics for it. And we just kind of put it on hold. We tried a couple of other songs or other lyrics for it that didn't work out. And then Stick It Out came along, and it fit the song, and we just arranged it and developed it from there. But it really goes either way. It depends on what we have to work with and what sort of mood we're in.
The intense electric guitar came from Alex Lifeson, who reminds us that amidst all that rockin' is a mature message, courtesy of drummer, lyricist Neil Peart. Here's Alex.
You go through so many things in life, and you learn to deal with things, and you learn to not deal with things. And it's really a matter of more of dealing with everything that comes by, and knowing that you have the power and the strength to do it inside you. And it's an easy thing to say, and it's not always an easy thing to do, but that's the bottom line. You know, you overcome these things, just keep at it, keep working at it. And I don't think he's preaching any kind of therapy, but he's talking about life experience, certainly. And you reach a certain stage in your life, certainly at the stage that I and most of my friends are at, where you start reevaluating your whole life and what it's all about. You know, it's something that everyone goes through, and it just suddenly happens, and so many things seem worthless. And really, you have to stick it out, because you have all the material to do it. You have it in you. Everybody does. We're all made of the same thing, and we can overcome any of these problems or obstacles in our lives, so long as we can depend on ourselves and we can love ourselves. And if you need to cry, cry. It's you. It's your tears. You have every right to.
It is the fire that lights itself, but it burns with a restless flame. The arrow on a moving target, the archer must be sure of his aim. It is the engine that drives itself, but it chooses the uphill climb. A bearing on magnetic north, growing farther away all the time. Can't stop moving. Stop moving. Can't stop. things used to be. I'm apt to remember the future. The past has no claim on me.
We always felt it was important to play as best we could and as hard as we could and as much as we could for the longest time. And as we developed and as our skills in the studio developed, we became almost surgical with the way we made records. You know, every beat had to be right on the money. Every note had to be perfect. Nothing could be even slightly out of tune. And you'd go in and drop in a lot, you know, notes here and there or whatever. And we really crafted records that way. With Counterparts, we decided that let's stop being so anal about the whole thing. Let's just, you know, play it. And if something's a little out of tune or if it speeds up a little bit here or there, you know, so what? It's exciting. If it feels good, it is good. So we took that approach with Counterparts, and it was really the first time that we finally left behind that very surgical approach to recording. And it was very enjoyable, and I think the results proved that was something that we needed to do. We needed to inject some feel into our music. Not that it was stiff before or unfeeling, just that there's something in a spontaneous take that you can never get back when you start playing it over and over to get it perfect. You lose this energy and this specialness and this magic that you can never get back. So certainly with Counterparts, we really took that tack. If it sounds good, if it feels good, then it is good. And I would think that we would continue going in that direction as well. It's really pure for us at this point, and it's a lot more satisfying.
Counterparts also contains a mini epic called Nobody's Hero. It tells the true story of three lives that were lost to violence, to ignorance, and to hate and injustice. Here again is Rush guitarist Alex Lifeson.
Well, in one case, it was a friend of his that he'd had in England when he was there. This is, you know, before he joined the band. He was living in London, and he was with a whole circle of friends, and one particular person became very friendly with and learned a lot and really respected the person a lot. And then sometime later he heard that he died of an illness, and that really struck him. In the other case, he didn't know this particular person, but he knew the family. They lived not far from where he lived, knew the parents and all of that, and she was brutally murdered. So I think it just led him to write about something about the unsung heroes of everyday life and what we can get out of that. We don't need the glory and we don't need to be put on a pedestal. We just have to be aware of the goodness that everyone has in them and how to employ that, how to use that every day and not worry about taking credit for it. You know, the heroes of television or movies are very artificial heroes. It's the people that are working day to day that are the true heroes.
I knew he was different in his sexuality. I went to his parties as a straight minority. It never seemed a threat to my masculinity. He only introduced me to a wider reality. As the years went by, we drifted apart. When I heard that he was gone, I felt the shadow cross my heart. But he's nobody's hero. Save the drowning child.
Drummer, lyricist Neil Peart.
Has sort of very tragic for us lyrics and has a very compassionate tone about it. We wanted the music to be positive because our feelings about the person involved were very positive. So consequently, we made the music very up-tempo and not at all the sentimental ballad that the lyrics might have expected it to be.
I think probably an intimacy, and certainly in Getty's vocal performance, there's a great deal of emotion in it. I think it's one of his most emotional performances on that record, certainly. It needed that, and it needed a quality musically that drew you into it. The intimacy of the acoustic guitar in the beginning and leading into something that was bigger and grander, that fit the kind of sense and size of what the song was all about. I remember when we wrote that song being really moved by it. You know, every record has one or two songs that do that for you, and the rest you think more in mechanical terms as you're developing it. But that certainly was the song on that album for me, as The Pass was earlier on. That was the same sort of song that had that same kind of emotional connection immediately as soon as we started working on it. Well, for the most part, and certainly from Rush fans, it's been very positive in that they've understood what the song was about. There have been some strange comments about it, in that, yes, some people said, you know, why are you writing about gay people and things like that? And I mean, that has absolutely nothing to do with what the song is about. As I've said, it's much broader than that. It deals with those qualities that are great and heroic in all people. It doesn't matter, you know, what you are. So it's, you know, that happens all the time. People don't understand things quite the way they were written or meant to be taken. And certainly Neil's lyrics can be taken in a number of different ways, depending on the listener. But for the most part, people are pretty clued in to what's going on. But that has gotten some strange comments in that sense.
It was long after midnight when we got to unconditional love. She said, sure, my heart is boundless, but don't push my limits too far.
Wave on a trunk.
Hi, this is Alex Lifeson of Rush in the studio with Redbeard. You have to be able to laugh a lot to live happily. Oh, it's the most important thing. And it's not just Rush, it's life in general. And fortunately for us, we share a common sense of humor, which is a little bit on the obscure. And we just love being together. We spend, 80% of our time laughing when we're together. And that includes when we're working. Even when we're on stage, I mean, there's always something that's going on that's inside, that we're chuckling about or having a good time about. And that lifts your spirits and makes life worth living. And you therefore like being around people like that. So that's played a very important part in our longevity. You know, I think a lot of Rush fans always wanted to hear us play like we used to play, if I can use that term. You know, bringing back that certain quality that we had in our earlier days, again, of the three-piece, of the core of the band, bringing it back and being more forceful with it and more focused and direct, I think was something that a lot of Rush fans really welcomed. For the true Rush fan, they have a long history from the first record or the first few records or 2112 or whatever, through Moving Pictures, through what we did in the late 80s up until Counterparts. And I think Counterparts relates to those records more than perhaps the last or the previous four records anyways. And I think it was a welcome return of a particular aspect of our sound that Rush fans wanted to hear again. Well, I don't think we've ever really depended on anyone outside of our audience for anything. For a long time, Rush was not the kind of band that got much airplay. There was not a lot of interest, usually got bad reviews. A lot of people really hated the band, but there were also a lot of people that did like the band, that were inside the band as much as we are. Rush fans are terrific for that. They've lived with us through so many different stages of our development, and they've taken it quite personally, and that is a great tribute to us, to have that kind of audience that grows with us. You know, I think a lot of our audience would say that there are things that they don't like that we've done, but they're vocal about it, and they'll still wait for the next record to see where we go with it. I mean, you have to have that support if you want to exist as long as we've existed. We do everything the way we feel we should do it. We don't have a management or a record company or anybody in the studio when we work. When we make a record, we make it for ourselves. We make it the way we think it's supposed to be. And we've had this audience that agrees with us for this long period of time. You know, we've been outside of trends. We've been outside of the mainstream. I think if there ever was an alternative band, it's been us. For two decades, we've been alternative to just about everything that's been going on. So, you know, the combination of those things, being able to do things the way you believe they should be done, having an audience that believes in you, has made it easy for us to continue. And we get along very well. We love working together. We love each other as friends. You know, everything is right about Rush.
There is a lake between the sun and moon, not too many know about. In the silence between whisper and shout, the space between wonder and doubt. This is a fine place, shining face to face. Those bonfire lights in the mirror sky, the space between.
Yeah. us to penetrate the gap between actor and act, the lens between wishes and fact. This is a fine place to hesitate. Those bonfire lights in the lake of sky, the time between wonder and why.
Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests, Alex Lyson, Geddy Lee, and Neil Peart. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard. For Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2017, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter, Brunei. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.